I would like to express our sincere thanks and also our gratitude, especially toward this cooperative body for promoting Buddhism all over the world. I don't think there is another religious body in any part of the world that we can compare with your noble work that you have been doing for many years, publishing and distributing Buddhist books all over the world. I hope you get more support, more courage and strength for you to continue your noble work. And today, this is my last talk. Tomorrow morning I have to leave the country. And the topic is, why do we practice Buddhism? It is a very important subject, because there are many religions. Religious competition is very unhealthy in the world today. Not only today. When the Buddha wanted to introduce this way of religious life in India at that time, where there were 62 religious groups, in spite of all those existing religions, why the Buddha wanted to introduce another religious way of life? All those existing religions we can categorize into four groups: natural religions, revealed religions, organized religions, and institutional religion. Four groups. The first one, natural religion. How religion was originated in the man's mind at the beginning. They could not understand the nature, natural phenomena, natural occurrences. When everything goes against them, when they are not in favor of them, they develop fear. Then they started to think how these things take place, like thunder, lightning, flood, earthquake, volcanic eruptions. They could not understand. Then they develop fear, thinking that there must be some sort of external force that which creates all these disturbances. On the other hand, having seen the sun and the moon, the galaxies, earth, jungles, rocks, hills, they thought they are living in this world through the influence of all these things. To express their gratitude and to influence them to function in their favor, they started to worship. Then worshiping, praying, offering started to all these natural things by creating the idea that there must be very strong force behind them. That is how the natural religions originated. Still, in certain countries, people pay more attention towards these natural religions. Later, they developed humanism. Humanism means duties and responsibilities, obligations and cooperations and assistance to each other. After that, they slowly introduce certain principles for human beings to uphold as humane qualities. Later, they thought, if they introduce all these principles or disciplines or humane qualities as human principle, people do not take seriously. Then they developed the concept of God. This concept of God originated in the mind by not knowing the cosmic law. When you study Indian history of religion, we can find one particular god, the figure of one particular god, we call dancing god. One leg is here, the other leg is always like this. You might have seen this, called dancing god. In India, they say Nataraja. Nataraja means the chief of the dancer. Then, to indicate this cosmic dance, scientists later discovered what it is. But at that time, they thought this must be some person. So first they started to worship energy. They were known as Shakti worshippers, energy worshippers. Later, this Shakti or this energy, they have transformed or personified into a figure, then given the name God. The concept of God first appeared in the man's mind by transforming that energy into a figure. Then they introduce these principles, these disciplines, these commandments, these religious laws come down from heaven, from the God, for human beings to uphold. After that, introduce this as a revealed religion, revealed by the God. Later, those people who could manage to think very deeply get together and discussed and organized, planned how to practice a religion. Then introduce, this is the way how to conduct a religious service, blessing service, rites, rituals, ceremonies, duties, discipline, behavior, all these things have been introduced by those thinking people who could understand human mentality to organize all our religious activities in proper manner, systematically. But earlier, all was scattered, there was no proper organization. So systematically organized religious way of life is called organized religion. Institutional religion. Further development of organized religion. Morals, ethics, way of life, duties, responsibilities, very systematically introduced to educate people as religious education, as religious principles, as religious duties, as moral conduct, character building. So all these good qualities introduced systematically as an educational system And that is called institutional religion. Buddhism is not belong to any of these four groups. It is an independent religion. Then how Buddhism come into existence? When Prince Siddhartha was a young boy, one day he was sitting under a garden, under a tree in the garden. He saw suddenly a snake come and catch a frog. Now the frog is struggling to escape. The snake is struggling to swallow. He was watching. When this battle was going on, another big bird come down from the sky and taken away the snake. The frog is still in the mouth. That incident has become the turning point in his mind for him to determine to find out what is the secret of this life. If existence is like this in this world, every living being depend on the other living being. Big ones depend on the small one. Fitters for survival. So from the very beginning up to the end, the one follow the other one follow the another one. This is called existence. Then what is the cause? What is the benefit or the meaning, the purpose of this existence? Every living being is struggling to escape from the death. Another one tried to come and catch. This is called existence. After thinking for a long period, discussing with various other teachers who taught him, he could not get the answer. Why living beings have to suffer like this? What is the meaning of this existence? What do we gain in the end? No answer. Then, at the age of 29, he decided, time has come for me to give up everything, renounce, go out, and to find out. Because all the others are in the dark. They do not know why they suffer. They do not know why they exist. For what purpose? I must try to find out. Then he renounced. Spent for 6 years by following various religious teachers, their instructions, guidance, methods, practices introduced by them. He practiced everything, but he could not gain what he wanted. Then he decided, I should not follow any of those existing religious teachers' guidance. I must use my independent mind to find out the truth, the reality in life. Then, after working independently, without depending on another person, finally, he gained enlightenment. After gaining this enlightenment, he announced, the Buddha was not a messenger of any god. The Buddha was not a prophet. The Buddha was not a son of God. The Buddha was not sent by another Buddha. That is the effort that he used life after life by cultivating, developing, eradicating all the good qualities and the bad things. To understand this very clearly, there was an incident. A Brahmin, the follower of another religion, one day happened to meet the Buddha. But this man has never seen such serene, so peaceful, appealing to the mind, features, complexion. When he considered, he thought this person cannot be a human being. He thought this must be a god. Then approached the Buddha, straight away asked, may I know whether you are a god? The Buddha said, no, I am not a god. Then asked, may I know whether you are any supernatural living being? He said, no, I am very natural. Then he asked, may I know whether you are an ordinary man? No, I am not an ordinary man. Then puzzling this in his mind, then he asked, then who are you? Then the Buddha gave the answer. It's a very important thing in his language, but the idea is important. How he introduced himself. If anybody asks actually who the Buddha is, Adi the answer. The original saying is like this. Abhinyayang abhinyatang bhavetabhancha bhavitang pahatabhang pahinang me tasma buddhosmi brahmana. Meaning, abhinyayang abhinyatang. I understood everything in this universe that which exists. Life after life, developing, cultivating my mind. Bhavetabhancha bhavitam. I have practiced all the good qualities, virtues, morals, ethics, everything. Pahatabhang pahinang me. I have eradicated all the evil, wicked, harmful, immoral thoughts, words and actions. Tasma buddhosmi brahmana. Brahmana, therefore I am the Buddha. These are the qualities of a Buddha. This is the way how he introduced himself. When he delivered his first sermon, Dharma Chakra Sutra. There he mentioned Chakkhum Udapadi, Jnanam Udapadi, Panya Udapadi, Vidya Udapadi, Aloko Udapadi. Five kinds of extraordinary wisdom that he gained with his enlightenment. So he says, Pubbesu ananusutesu dhammesu. This I never experienced before, earlier. This is the first time. Only after gaining enlightenment. What are those five things? Chakkhum udapadi. In English we say divine eyes. That is the English language terms. Divine vision. That means the things that we cannot see properly, the Buddha can understand what it is about the world or the universe or the nature or phenomena and other world system, and even one particular object, we can see only the visual object, but we do not know how to penetrate our mind into that object to understand what it is. That is called divine vision. He got it. Panya udapadi. Knowledge, understanding, to analyze the whole universe. How things come into existence, why they change, why they decay, why they disappear, and what happened to it. We create our own imagination, but through that enlightenment, that wisdom, he can understand anything that which exists in this universe. Panya Udapadi. Extraordinary knowledge is called Panya, not ordinary knowledge. That is called supreme wisdom. This supreme wisdom to analyze the world into mundane world or supramundane world. Take for instance, universe he divide into three. Kamaloka, Rupaloka, Arupaloka. Mundane world, sensual world, like humans, animals, devas, who experience sensual pleasure, one world system. Rupaloka, fine material world, where living beings, devas and brahmas experience very luminous, very refined physical body, for them to experience life very smoothly, not a big battle like human life or animal's life. That is another world system. Then Arupaloka, the life exists without a body. Because body is the house, life is inside the body. This is the house. So the life occupies this house and exist. In this part of the world, life cannot exist without a shelter. This is the shelter. But in that part of the world, life can exist without a shelter, without the body. So he analyzed in three ways. That is supreme wisdom. Again he analyzed the world system. Sattaloka, Sankharaloka, and Akasalo, the whole universe, again analyzed into three. Sattaloka, world systems where there are different kinds of living beings. You can see. World systems where there are only elements, no living beings. Astronomers have seen many of them, still they could not find out living beings, but they suspect definitely there must be some living being. Again, Akasaloka, a space without element. The whole universe divided into three categories in this way. Only by using that supreme wisdom, a person can understand what these universes are.
Vidya Udapadi. Analytical knowledge. Scientists discovered many things in this world without depending on God, without depending on religion, without depending on traditional belief, but by using their independent mind as used by the Buddha. To observe, to investigate, to find out. Then they discovered many things. The Buddha also gained that analytical knowledge to analyze, to explain anything that which exists. And he says, Uppado panyayati, Vayo panyayati, Thitasya anyatattham panyayati. The whole universe, any part of the universe, galaxies, planet, life, earth, water, element, come into existence. But they never remain as they existed. So there are so many factors, forces behind. they are going on changing, 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 changing. This is called existence. Now, our elements and energies are changing. Now we say we are living. We are existing. Because of these changes. If there are no changes, no existence. Then he explained, things come into existence, then they are going on changing, changing. Now this earth that we are living come into existence due to combinations of elements and energies, never remain forever without changing. Changing, then decaying. Decaying, decaying after disappearing. This is the nature of anything, the sun and the moons and the galaxies and the universes. Everything appear, change, decay and disappear. This is called analytical knowledge. Anicca, anicca, dukkha, anatta. Three characteristics. Others could not see this. He said, everything is anicca, changing, changing, changing. No one can stop this. We can go ahead. When you grow old, seeing changes have taken place, then we go and worship to God and the Buddha and Bodhisattvas, asking, please don't allow me to grow old so quickly. Allow me to live at least few more years without becoming. It doesn't work. It is the nature. Therefore, our duty is to cooperate with the law, with the nature, with the universal law, not to worship and pray. Then, dukkha, sufferings, unsatisfactoriness. Physically, suffering. Mentally, unsatisfactoriness. We experience more unsatisfactoriness in our life. Every minute, we experience some sort of unsatisfactoriness. There are millions of things for us to be bothered. We experience unsatisfactoriness. This body we love so much, willing to spend millions of billions of dollars. But this body go against our will, against our wish. Unsatisfactoriness. We cannot control our mind. We want to control unsatisfactoriness. We cannot control our family members. Unsatisfactoriness. In everything, we experience unsatisfactoriness. Then, anatta. This is the word in Mahayana schools, elaborated, explained deeply as nothingness or voidness, and but very easily we can understand those who do not agree with the Buddha's teaching. When we refer to Albert Einstein, well-known scientist, Albert Einstein says, when we analyze this world, we separate elements and energies, and later elements also disappear. There is no world, no element. This is scientific analysis. So what the Buddha said, whatever things come into existence goes on changing, changing, decaying, decaying, and disappear. After that, certain things which have mind reappear. Certain things that exist without mental energy absorb elements into elements, energies into elements. The objects disappear. Therefore, there is nothing to remain forever without changing, without decaying, without dying. There is no permanent, everlasting life in any part of the world. We create this because of our craving is so deep. Our mind created permanent life according to our needs, according to our greed. But in reality, according to the teachings of the Buddha, there is no permanent world, permanent universe, permanent life. This is the nature of this wonderful analytical knowledge. Aloko Udapadi. Brightness arose in my mind. Formerly I never had this, he said. Our minds are clouded with wrong concepts, wrong beliefs, imaginations, fear, worries. Again, we also have evil forces which create more darkness in our mind. Our craving or selfishness, our anger, hatred, jealousy, grudge, ill will, enmity, our ignorance, illusion, hallucination, all these things are dark clouds, cover the mind. Therefore, mind cannot open properly to see things clouded. When all these clouded completely removed from the mind, brightness appear in the mind. When the brightness appeared in the mind, that mind can see things clearly. Not necessary to observe, study one by one. The brightness. Now if I enter into this building, there is no light. I cannot see anything. I have to touch one by one, then guess what it is. But now it is not necessary because there is brightness. So when the brightness appears in the mind, we can see things properly. That is why we always create misunderstanding, misconception, wrong ideas in our mind because of the darkness. So the Buddha says, now no more darkness in my mind, but only brightness. Aloko Udapadi. Then he announced, Paturahosi Magadhesu Pubbe Dhammo Asuddho Samalehi Chinti. This dharma or this doctrine that I understood is not a new dharma or new doctrine. This dharma existed long ago, but people have misinterpreted, misled by polluting the purity of the dharma. Therefore, the dharma disappeared from the people's minds. That means the Buddha did not introduce a new doctrine or new religion, but he found this dharma or this doctrine is not there in any of those existing religions at that time. That is why he wanted to introduce this dharma as a new doctrine or new religion. When the Buddha started this mission, by introducing the dharma that he understood, all the existing religions in that country at that time could not agree with the Buddha. The Buddha has revolutionized religious way of life in India. He started with eight noble paths, eight items for people to lead a noble way of respectable life to be religious. Dr. Rhys David, the founder of the Pali Text Society in London 100 years ago, he has written, I have read, studied, he was the son of a Christian pastor, He said, I could not find four noble truths and eight noble paths in any of those existing religions. That is what the Buddha says. Dharma has forgotten by the people. So he started with right understanding, sammāditti. He did not start his mission with faith or belief. He did not ask people to believe anything, maintain as their faith. Started with understanding. Pariyatti, Patipatti, Patived. These three things. Study, practice, experience. He never asked people to believe anything. First you have to study. Without studying, how can you believe? You must practice. Otherwise, how can you understand whether right or wrong? Then you get experience. This is the technique, this is the method introduced by the Buddha. But all the other existing religionists have gone against the Buddha. They have become enemies because the Buddha pointed out many of those practices, many of those beliefs, many of those traditions that they have been maintaining for thousands of years, there's no religious value at all, the Buddha said. Mr. Nehru, the former Prime Minister of India, in his book, Discovery of India, he has written, I really cannot understand what sort of courage and knowledge the Buddha had to say that many of those existing Indian traditional religious practices are wrong. There are no religious value at all, but they have been maintaining for thousands of years. But the Buddha had the courage to point out that there are no religious values in those practices. The Buddha wanted to release us from religious slavery. At that time in India, there were 33 million gods. After the scientific education, slowly, one by one, most of them have disappeared. But at that time, they had 33 million gods. So human beings have become slaves to those gods. Day and night, they are going on praying and praying and worshipping and worshipping and offering by disgracing their intelligence, their human dignity. They are praying means begging. Begging and begging and begging. So the Buddha wanted to release these people who have become beggars, religious beggars, to maintain their human dignity, to know the validity of a human life. So, first duty was to release humanity from religious slavery. Having seen how people have been suffering, torturing themselves in the name of religion, without eating, without sleeping, without wearing a piece of cloth even during the winter as a religious principle, without taking medicines when they are sick, and also by burning, cutting here and there, poking, thinking that they can get rid of the sins or the bad karmas committed by them. The Buddha said, this is not the method for people to practice a religion. By torturing this physical body, we never gain anything. He said, I also practiced this for 6 years, but I did not gain anything. I suffer, that's all. If we really want to punish for committing evils or the bad karma or sins, instead of punishing the body, we had to punish the mind. Body is not responsible for the bad karma. Body cannot create any karma. Mind used the body as a weapon. Therefore, you had to punish the mind. And how to punish the mind, he taught. When anger arises, you must punish that mind without allowing this anger to flare up. When jealousy or grudge or ill will or enmity appear in the mind, control that mind without allowing that mind to harbor them, develop them. When jealousy appears in the mind, control them. It is useless. You never gain anything. Don't allow this mind to maintain this jealousy. Then selfishness appears in the mind. Control that mind, knowing selfishness is useless. It is harmful. We never gain anything. Control the mind. So when we punish the mind, we will be able to overcome the bad effect of the karma that we have committed, not by torturing the body. So introduce a normal religious way of life for people to practice without suffering in the name of their religions. So we can practice Buddhism as gentlemen by leading a normal life without torturing, without suffering, but by giving due credit to human intelligence, human dignity, human qualities, human values, then we gain what we need as salvation or liberation or deliverance or freedom from unsatisfactoriness in our life. Then he has seen many people practicing their religion by sacrificing poor animals, burning them, thousands of them at a time, burn them with rice, grain, and various other valuable things to please God. They believe when they perform these animal sacrifices to God, He will be happy and He bless us for our prosperity, for our protection, for our salvation. The Buddha says it is cruelty, it is utter wastage, there is no religious value at all. Some others practice their religious way of life without uttering even one word, complete silence in their life. But the Buddha has said, only foolish people keep quiet because they haven't got anything to talk. If there is anything important to talk, they must talk, the Buddha's advice. Therefore, he did not encourage people to keep quiet without talking as a religious principle. Then social ill supported by religions, discrimination to women. In the whole country, there was no religion that given due place for women to practice a religion. According to them, women are very dirty and they are not suitable to enter into a place of worship. Even today in India,
There are certain places where women are not allowed. So the Buddha had a very big battle. All the other religionists come against the Buddha for giving full freedom, first time in the human history, for women to enter into the holy order. You can understand how difficult it is even today, at the end of the 20th century, even in the West, Christian churches against this. They say, still, women are not capable, not qualified to enter into the holy order. What the Buddha has done nearly 3,000 years ago, at the beginning, he pretended that he is reluctant for women to understand the difficulty of that way of life. Later he has given full freedom for women to enter into the holy order, not only to practice religion, but enter into the holy order to perform all the religious duties and responsibilities. That is the remarkable contribution the Buddha has done to humanity. One day, King Pasenadi Kosala was talking to the Buddha. Somebody came and whispered something to the king's ear. And the king's face became very sour. The Buddha was watching. Then the Buddha asked, "Why? What happened to you?" "So I heard a very bad news." "What is that?" "My queen was expecting a baby. I thought that must be a baby boy. But just now I heard it was a baby girl. I'm very unhappy about that." Then the Buddha said,